This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, the shattering of an all-American town. First up, when it started in November 1943, the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission was known as the Mayor's Friendly Relations Committee. The purpose of the agency was to give minority groups better access to local government. And joining us to discuss the work of the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, University of Cincinnati School of Planning Professor Emeritus Dr. Thomas Wagner, and UC School of Planning Senior Visiting Scholar and a fellow at the University of Kentucky Appalachian Center, Dr. Philip Obermiller. Their new book is The Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, A History, 1943 through 2013. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Phil, good afternoon. Good to see you.
Hi, Mark.
And Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you here.
Yes, thanks.
I should point out first off that this book is more than just about the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission. You lay out a lot of what was going on nationally at the time. And trying to put things in context, I think that's a good starting point to talk about the book and the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, is to put it in some context. What was the backdrop in the 1940s as the commission, or as it was originally called, the Mayor's Friendly Relations Committee, was being formed?
As we point out in the book, it was not a time of national unity during the middle of World War II, as many imagine. There were labor strikes, and there were a lot of racial conflicts. Populations were on the move. The war industries were bringing people out of the Deep South, both black and white, and they were aggregating together, coming together in the cities, and this caused a lot of tension. And so in 1941, there was a major strike at the Rouge plant, and the strike breakers often were African American. And so these tensions were...
And the Rouge plant is Dearborn, Michigan, correct?
It is.
Okay. The Ford plant there.
And subsequently in 1943, there was a fairly major eruption, which essentially was a race riot. Several dozens of people died, and a lot of the city was left in smoke and ashes. This had an impact. This ricocheted in Cincinnati because we had men and women working in both the military and in the war industries who were African American, and they were not receiving the same kinds of civil rights that that the white folks were, and the tension was here as well. Just to put a quick point on it, you couldn't go into a bowling alley, you couldn't go into a movie theater, you couldn't go into a restaurant. The Bar Association, the Medical Association, the University of Cincinnati were all highly segregated. Mm-hmm. And yet these people were given their all for their country in the war effort. And that caused a lot of tension. And so once Detroit erupted, people in Cincinnati took note.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just Cincinnati. A lot of cities responded to this by forming various different racial commissions and human relations commissions.
Yeah, that's correct. After the riots in Detroit, 1943, not only did Cincinnati begin to try to find ways to address the issues that were in the community, but these kinds of organizations, mayors, friendly relations committees, and so on, were formed in Chicago, Grand Rapids, Indianapolis, throughout the Midwest. These kinds of organizations tend to be found more in the Midwest than on either of the coast, which I think is kind of a phenomenon. It was a Midwestern movement at the time.
Well, why do you think that is, Tom?
Well, I think in part because at the time, if you look at the internal migration within the United States, the blacks who were coming out of the Cotton Belt, whites who were leaving the coal mines in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia throughout Appalachia, they were moving into the areas in the north, Detroit, Chicago, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Hamilton, Middletown, the cities throughout the Midwest. And consequently, I think there was a greater chance for these kinds of tensions, the potential for riots between blacks and whites. Consequently, the public leaders, not just the political leaders, but business leaders, religious leaders, others were looking for ways to bring about some harmony so there would not be the kind of riots that they had seen in Detroit.
Is there a distinction, Phil? We talk about human relations. How is that different from human rights, from civil rights, from race relations?
The notion that the mayor's Friendly Relations Committee operated under was that this was an effort at persuasion, an effort to change people's minds and therefore their behaviors. If you have civil rights, if you have human rights, very often there are laws involved and there are tribunals involved and there are sanctions involved. And with the human relations approach, you're trying to change people's minds. And that's a wholly different approach because you can't go to jail for not changing your mind. On the other hand, you can't really bully a bigot with laws. You've got to go after them and try to see if they can't see your side of the story.
Was this a more subtle approach?
Much more subtle.
Okay. Now, Tom, why did you and Phil want to tell the story of the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission?
Well, it begins with Dr. Erica King Betts, who at the time that this project began was the director of the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, and she wanted to have some understanding of what had gone on before. And she discovered that there was a unused restroom in the city hall that was just packed full of boxes and other records from the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission. And she came together with Michael Maloney, who's a consultant here in town. And Michael Maloney and Associates worked out an agreement with the CHRC to put together a project. And Mike went out and found the funding for it. And the idea was to find these records not only in City Hall, but in other locations around the city. There was a warehouse with years of records in them, and to get them archived. And Mike put together a team after he had the funding. He had an archivist, a public historian, several graduate students, and they collected these records, organized them, and moved them to the, the archives library at the University of Cincinnati. And then it was a desire to use these records and to create a 70-year history of CHRC, MFRC, and then CHRC. And Mike and Erica asked that Phil and I begin doing that. We both had some experience with previous books of working with archival records and putting together a story of organization or a group of people. And so that's how it began, and it was a very exciting and very interesting project.
And there's a graduate student who's now a doctorate, has his doctorate in history by the name of Nathan McGee, who actually computerized everything. So there is a full accession list, not only of all of the files that we gathered from all over the place, but also links to Tulane University, where there are records, Hebrew Union, Ohio History, Cincinnati History, and digitized it. And then he went the next step and looked at all of the newspaper records, including the Herald, the Old Post, the Enquirer, and gave us a synopsis of each one of those. And so we were working with a tremendous, I mean, we had hundreds of boxes of files that we're looking at that we needed to condense into a readable narrative. And that was very intentional on our part. Yeah. The way this book was constructed was to make it accessible, to make it readable. A lot of scholarly notes, but no footnotes.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that was amazing were the number of photographs that we found. There were just boxes and boxes of photographs. One of the problems with many of the photographs is that no one had put any sort of caption on them. So it was, we had to, and sometimes we were able to sort out who they were. But then on some other occasions, there was a very clear record of with the photographs. So we have about 20 photographs in the book, but we could have put 2,000 photographs in
easily
the book.
Put 2,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Phil, you start off in the 1940s. How much recognition did the Mayor's Friendly Relations Committee, how much did it get when it first started out in the 1940s?
It was a slow and rugged start. Not much money, not much staffing, and a lot of opposition, actually. But slowly, Jeffrey Lazarus from the old Shillitoes found Marshall Bragdon to become the executive director. And Bragdon was there for the next 20 years, and he did an incredible job of running the committee. And over time, he built. Their early annual meetings were very, very scantily attended. Within 5 years, they had hundreds of invitations and hundreds of acceptances going out. And so the actual weight of the committee, if you will, grew, if not its actual productivity.
Now, in the 1950s, you had several Supreme Court rulings that were in favor of desegregation. Were the 50s also a time of growth for the Mayor's Friendly Relations Committee?
It's when it came into its own as an organization. In the early part, we have a picture of Marsh Bragdon on the floor at City Hall, actually building furniture because he had no budget for desks and things. But as an organization, it began to gain momentum. But during the 50s, it had many civil rights initiatives around housing, around employment, and they really couldn't make very much headway at all. The unions opposed them, and Cincinnati was adding a lot of suburbs, new suburbs, and every time Ted Berry would bring something up in council to try to make it an integrated situation, and the committee would weigh in and say, yes, we need to have it, and then it would not pass the vote, wouldn't pass muster. So it wasn't until the late 50s when the state set up a civil rights commission, and one of the early presidents of the MFRC became the executive director of that, civil rights really began to get some traction. Marsh Bragdon and the committee never stopped working in the background to try to make that happen.
Was there a risk for African Americans to be involved with the committee?
The committee needs to be understood as a group of elites. They were the cream of the African American community and the higher status people from the white community, and so I don't think there was any threat in that sense. There was probably political jeopardy more than anything.
When that initial committee was set up, there were 109 members, and the mayor's office had reached out to various religious leaders, businessmen, prominent African Americans in the community. So it was, in fact, a very broad committee.
We will continue our conversation about the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. WVXU is excited to welcome Ken Rudin, the political junkie, to Cincinnati as part of our Democracy in Me initiative. And you can meet Ken and other members of our news team on Thursday, October 26th, this Thursday, at the Coffee Emporium in Over the Rhine. We'll be there between 8 and 9 that morning, so please stop by and say hello. And then Ken and Howard Wilkinson will join me at 1 o'clock for our monthly political junkie show. Joining us to discuss the work of the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission are University of Cincinnati School of Planning Professor Emeritus Dr. Thomas Wagner and UC School of Planning Senior Visiting Scholar and a fellow at the University of Kentucky Appalachian Center, Dr. Philip Obermiller. Their new book is The Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, A History, 1943 through 2013. And if you'd like to join us, you can call 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Phil, we go through the 1950s, and the Mayor's Friendly Relations Committee sees some growth and starts to get some recognition. Then come the 1960s. How do you characterize that decade?
That decade was an inflection point because the leadership changed from pretty much a white leadership to a African-American leadership with the change in the structure from the old Marriage Friendly Relations Committee to the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission. And this was also, as you know, a very fraught time with riots occurring and things like that. But Marshall Bragdon, who was executive director for 20 years, set his goal not to have any riots, and there were no riots in Cincinnati during his tenure there. Not because of that, but things began to really change in Cincinnati. There was a new black executive director who was off in Washington raising funds for a youth employment initiative when the first riots occurred in Cincinnati, and he didn't last very long. And then the real change came with Virginia Coffey, the first woman, an African-American director of the Human Relations, the new Human Relations Commission. And she changed its focus from more of a social work and an empathetic kind of organization to an organization that was interested in empowering various minorities within the city, and also an organization that was interested in youth. And she set those in motion, and those two themes can still be found to this day.
So we go through the 1960s, which were a volatile period. Were the 70s any more stable?
No, it became organizationally unstable. City Council commenced its attacks. They removed programs. They removed funding. There were changes in directors, and it was a very difficult time for the organization as such. And yet its programs remained functioning at the street level. They still kept that going.
Tom, in the 80s and the 90s then, how would you characterize those decades for the commission?
The 80s, interestingly, were somewhat stable years for race relations in the United States. That lasted for about 13 years until the riots in Los Angeles. But in Cincinnati, it was a period. Alan Howard, who was a reporter for the Cincinnati Enquirer, he talked about the fact that during times of quiet in the city, the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission would quite often be challenged by city council and by other leaders. You're not doing enough, you're not doing enough. But it was a quiet period. And then when there would be problems, they were also challenged because they hadn't prevented the problems. So it was a two-edged sword in some ways for them. But there was good, solid leadership during that period. Monty Whitney, Tom Garner, Arzell Nelson were all the directors. Arzell Nelson was on the staff or director for about 26 years, and he brought a real stability to that period. And there was another staff member, Susan Noonan, who was really brought in. She was a criminal justice master's degree student from University of Cincinnati, and she worked with the police. And they had a number of programs to work with youth to try to keep issues down. For example, for some of the concerts in town, Susan's group would go out and work with the youth and with the police to keep the lid on things, keep things from getting too difficult. So a lot of that kind of work was not recognized by the public or even by the city council.
And that was the case leading up to what happened in 2001. I think they were being criticized for not doing enough.
Yeah, that's an interesting another inflection point, because at that point, before 2001, before Cecil Thomas was asked to be to leave his position with the Cincinnati Police Department and become the director of the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, there was a real effort by some council members to discontinue CHRC. And the chairman at that time of the board recruited Cecil Thomas, and Thomas kept telling the city leaders that we've got problems in the city. Things are not going well for the African Americans in the various communities. And they didn't listen to him. And with the Timothy Thomas shooting, which led to the 2001 riots, we had 4 or 5 days of real turmoil in the city. It had a lot of property damage. Fortunately, no one except for Mr. Thomas was killed. But Cecil Thomas was right there trying to bring peace and over the Rhine, which was the center of the riots. And following those riots, the CHRC instituted study circles and some other things to try to help people come together after those riots. There was a committee appointed by the mayor, but that didn't seem to have much success. Again, it was a large committee, some infighting within that committee. But the work of CHRC, again, kind of behind the scenes and in the communities, was very helpful to restore peace.
Now, what kinds of things were they doing? Can you give me some specific examples?
Well, they had community monitors at that time, and these were folks who were in the community trying to, you know, to keep peace as much as possible. And then after the riots themselves, Cecil Thomas was out walking in the streets of over the Rhine. They brought in a national program called Study Circles to try to bring people together to talk about what caused the riots and so on. Now, the city council and the mayor, they were put in a very difficult position at this time. But by bringing in the National Guard and state troopers and others, they were able to bring peace to the community. But then you have to follow that with a healing process. And I think CHRC had a big part in that healing process.
So what eventually happens to the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission?
Well, Cecil Thomas was the director for about 5 years. And then he was followed by two other directors. And in November of 2016, the city of Cincinnati City Council and the city government decided to discontinue the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission as an independent body. And they created an Office of Human Relations in the city administration. And that is currently the structure they have now and trying to continue. And in some ways, this is a good move because I would expect that it would receive funding from city council. Paul Booth is the current director of that office. And so I would think that the city council would continue to fund that at an appropriate level. Perhaps one of the downsides of having it as a part of the city office or part of the city structure, administrative structure, is it may not be as independent as it would be with a board, an independent board.
So, Phil, what do you think in terms of accomplishments when you look at the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission? What do you think the accomplishments of the organization were?
I'm put in mind of a newspaper article that described, no matter what set of initials you use, MFRC, CHRC, and now OHR, they were described as an 11-foot pole because they would go to places and engage in situations that nobody would touch with a 10-foot pole. And that's going to be going on continuously now. The two major areas are going to be in terms and from the 1940s on, there have always been problems with altercations with the police, and police-community relations is going to continue to be a major concern. And then The youth initiatives, I think, on the other side of the coin, are also going to be very important as things go forward. And the problem is, to summarize, we don't know what they've accomplished because we don't know how many riots we didn't have, how many minds were changed, how many insults were not thrown because of their work. It can't be quantified. There is no metric. It's sort of what they call the quiet side of the civil rights movement. And they've worked hard. I think the people in these organizations have their heritage among the abolitionists and the conductors on the Underground Railroad. They saw injustice and they stood up to it.
Mm-hmm. Phil, how do you assess the organization in its 70 years?
Well, it's interesting. Alan Howard in one of his articles. In one of his articles described it as a rugged and controversial existence. And I think that's the right way to describe it, because they did have their ups and downs and they were challenged by a lot of folks, but they persisted. And I think Cincinnati is much better off because of people like the directors of CHRC and the staff and others who were part of the whole effort.
So what's the message you want people to take away from this book about the CHRC?
We have a very interesting history of trying to get along with each other, of making specific efforts to reconcile, to mediate, and sometimes we lose track of who we are and where we've come from. It's important to have more confrontative kinds of situations, but it's also important to remember that those are made more effective by people working behind the scenes to quietly set the stage for social progress.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Well, I don't think I can say it any better than what Phil has. It's one of the things that, having lived in the city, I'm not a native, but I've lived here for 75 years. I am thankful for people like Marshall Bragdon and Jenny Coffey and Cecil Thomas and the others who stood out with that 11-foot pole and took on issues that other people wouldn't take on.
Mm-hmm. You think the OHR is going to carry this on?
Well, it certainly has a heritage and a history, and if they have a commitment, yes.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Phil?
Historians are not allowed to do this thing called presentism.
So it's a violation of your.
I'll wait. Actually, I'm a sociologist, but I will wait and check.
He
the archives.
He tried to put one over on me, didn't he? Okay.
I'll wait and check the archives.
Okay. Well, Phil and Tom, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Really enjoyed talking to both of you. University of Cincinnati School of Planning Professor Emeritus Dr. Thomas Wagner and UC School of Planning Senior Visiting Scholar and a fellow at the University of Kentucky Appalachian Center Dr. Philip Obermiller. Their new book is The Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, A History, 1943 through 2013. And they'll be at Books by the Banks on Saturday. We'll hear more about that event coming up later in the show. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.